This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 288, where today CJ and Andrew are going to catch up on the latest news in the cloud space, recorded live January the 25th, 2019.
Struggling to reproduce problems in your code base? Successful software starts with Raygun. Raygun provides application performance monitoring, unlike anything that you've experienced before, offering greater clarity around how your software is performing for your customers than any other APM provider. Easily detect and diagnose issues impacting end users and monitor every part of your stack in one place. It's time to get back to building great software instead of fighting it. Start your journey to better software quality and try Raygun for free at raygun.com today.
Man, I'm still not comfortable saying 2019.
It's still weird, isn't it?
When I wrote it down in our notes to say when we were recording this, I wrote down 2018 again. Then I went, no, it's 2019. No, wait, is it 2019? Yeah, it's 2019. Still not used to it.
Back to the future.
Yeah, pretty much. So how's it going, bud?
Very well, thanks. Yeah, really good. We haven't done a news show in a while, so we got a bunch of good stuff to cover this week.
We do. Quite a bit of stuff. So we have a lot of things to get through, some Azure stuff, some Office stuff, some Windowsy stuff, some AWS stuff, some Google stuff, some cloudy stuff. and of course, a handful of picks.
And some picks, yes. And hey, so actually on that, we've had a really good response from listeners on taking us up on sending us in picks. So for all of those who are listening, we've got some great picks at the end of the show, again, as per usual. But if you've got ideas for us, send them in and if we pick one of your picks for the listener pick in the pick section, then we will send you and it gets read on the show if we pick your pick, then we'll send you a solo FIDO 2 hardware security USB stick that you can use to do logins with Microsoft Account Now and Facebook and GitHub and Google and all that sort of stuff. So we've had some great entries, just that I'd let people know. Thanks for sending them in.
Absolutely. Yeah. I use mine. I love it. It's cool it's a fun little thing to show off to show to people as well when they ask, oh, what is that thing? And so explain to them what that is. So it's cool to see that it's going well for them. Those guys are doing well too. I saw the solo keys. If you're interested in getting one and you don't want to send a link and you want to support the project, you can get them on Amazon now. So they're showing up in the Amazon store. So they're selling them through there as well.
That's cool.
Yeah.
It makes it easy, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
Yeah. So how about you? What have you been up to? jinx.
Man, just work. I'm planning out the next week or so. Planned out this of 2019, got all the sprints scheduled for my course. I'm really trying this year to, the number one thing on my plate is to finish the course. So that's like the number one priority in front of everything else, probably at the expense of like, you know, marketing and sales and stuff like that and trying to grow the business. So I want to get this course done. And so I've got a fairly aggressive schedule to get it all knocked out. And you know, when you have like, you know, when you're doing stuff like that, when you're doing like product stuff and you have a pitch that you want to do, and you may think of it as kind of like maybe bad news or questionable news, but you got to share it with you're trying to decide, do I need to share this with my customers? Should I share it with them? What are they going to say? Mm-hmm. And this isn't prospective customers. What I did is I do a thing once a month for my ultimate subscribers, the higher end subscribers. I do an office hours and invite them to jump on. We do a 1 hour Zoom call where they can ask questions. I give an update on the course, an update on State of the Union on SharePoint framework. And then we just go through questions they submit.
Update on State of the Union.
Yeah.
Did you cancel yours too?
Nope. Mine. I did mine.
Sorry. I really couldn't help. Couldn't help.
So I sat down this past week with a bunch of them and we recorded, and I've had a bunch of people watch that could not attend have watched the recording. And I shared with them what the plan was. And I would have thought that this group had a better chance of being disappointed, or being, if they could have been disappointed, this was the group to be disappointed or negative. I guess that's a better way to say it. Because they've already paid for the course and they're waiting for additional content to be finished. So it's not like, it's like, we've already paid for it. Where is it? I shared all the news with them, and I didn't get anything but overwhelmingly positive response on, it's the right thing, it makes sense, I get why it's not done yet, it's taking time, and like the schedule and all that. So it was a really good, it was nice and reassuring to see people saying that. So I got a pretty good shot with it. And of course, this week I've been fighting through trying to get one thing working to add to the course. There's one topic on calling authenticated APIs. from the SharePoint framework. And one of the things, all the demos that they show you, it's support that was added to the SharePoint framework in GA late last year. And when they did it, all of the demos show you how to like call an existing API that's secure with Azure AD. But yeah. I wanted to show something, how do I create my own to do this? And it was a little bit harder to get everything working than I thought it should have been. It seems like there's a bit of a delay. When you assign all the permissions, it can take a few minutes for things to take effect. So that was tripping me up. But I've got a repeatable process now that works pretty well and shows how to not only secure an endpoint so it can only be called by SharePoint, but also so that it can only be called by one individual. So you can't filter it down by the application. I'll show you in the class how to filter it down by a specific user. So you can give just certain users doing it. So we have like custom scopes, custom permissions, all that stuff. So it's one of those tech things. It's like going, yes, I got it working and everything's done. Now I just got to go record all the content. So unfortunately, it took 2 days more than I thought it was going to take, but whatever.
Nice. Progress
there. Anyway, yeah, progress. How about you?
Excellent. What have I been up to? Did some more home automation, put some more light switches in, electrocuted myself 0 times this time, which I thought was pretty exciting.
I made not exciting.
In the episode, we talked about our predictions. Not exciting, yeah, true. Or our wishes and our goals. I mentioned this personal project that it's motivated me to get a bit more done on it. So I did some work on that over the weekend and resurrected a whole bunch of my old code, which I'd written in Node and in TypeScript, but I've rewritten it all in .NET Core. Mm. So I'm doing it as a container-based backend, and it's all going into Kubernetes and all that sort of stuff. But it's but I've rewritten it all in .NET Core and ASP.NET Core. So the processes, the background stuff's all done in just .NET Core. And now I'm working on the API for it, which is in ASP.NET Core.
Mm. How do you like .NET Core? Is this your first .NET Core like main project you've done, or?
No, we use it at Hyperfish for a couple of things. So I've had a bit of exposure through that. But yeah, that's the first sort of personal project, I guess, using .NET Core. I'm loving it. I'm doing it all on my Mac. I'm loving it with VS Code. The debug and build experience is really good. Like, it's nice. Microsoft are doing a good job with VS Code and .NET Core. You know, you get debug points and, you know, sorry, breakpoints, and you get a fairly good sort of development experience that you know, not quite as rich and featureful as Visual Studio, full Visual Studio, but pretty decent. Enough for me anyway. So I'm making some progress on that. And then obviously just, you know, day job stuff. Regular job. So catching up back from my trip to Australia and things, and really getting back on top of things here. So yeah, no, it's been a really, really busy time.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Can't wait to show you what I've been up to on this project and see what you think.
I'm looking forward to seeing it. I have an understanding of what you're doing. As I know, we've talked about it a little bit offline and stuff, but I'm curious to take a look at it.
It's fun to get into it. And I actually took a lot of inspiration from Troy Hunt. He runs the Have I Been Pwned website.
Yeah.
And he deals with a lot of data. And this project that I'm working on, I also have to deal with a lot of records, like a lot of rows and stuff, right? And I'm trying to take the approach that he did, where he doesn't really use a relational database.
Mm-hmm. Just shows all the tables.
I'm trying to do it all with Azure Table Storage and Cosmos DB and stuff like that. So I'm trying to do it just with table storage and no Cosmos. So we'll see how far I get with it. But yeah, he sort of inspired me to think about things a bit differently, right? And not just start with your database design.
Yeah.
Relational database. There you go.
Yeah. That's
still a database, but it's just different type.
I have a project that I need to do eventually. It's not going to happen anytime soon, but it's also dealing with a ton of data. I've talked to you a little bit about it, dealing with a ton of data. And that's another thing that I have to tackle too, is the whole, you know, the way that mine is set up is, I think what little I understand of it or little I know of it, a graph database really would be nice in this case here, because there's a lot of interrelationships between things. But if you've never done one of those, you never designed something like that, it's kind of like, where do you start? I want to like stand over somebody's shoulder and watch what they go through to do it. So I think I found a friend of mine. I didn't realize he had done this before, and I explained the problem to him. He thinks it's really interesting, so he wants to do it. I'm like, all right, well, it'll be easy. So if you want to jump involved, I don't have to pay for it. That'd be awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, cool. All right. What do you say we jump to some news?
Let's do it.
Hey, we all know that sometimes shift happens. That's why this spring, the inaugural Shift Happens Conference will be coming to Washington, D.C. on June 12th and 13th. Hear from industry heavy hitters, change agents, and innovators as they share digital transformation wisdom. With keynotes from Microsoft's Jeff Teper and Tony Towns-Whitley, and analyst insights from Constellation and Forrester Research, this event is not to be missed. Over 2 days, find out how to get the most out of your Microsoft Office 365 and SharePoint investments, and hear about the success and failures firsthand from some of the largest and most regulated organizations. For more information, visit www.shifthappenscon.com and use the discount code CLOUDSHOW for 25% off registration for both single and group discounts. Inbox Zero is a thing of the past. We're also inundated with email, and that's where Samebox comes in. Think of it as an EMT for your email. As messages flow in, Samebox does the triage for you. Sane later sifts through all the distracting stuff out of your inbox so that you can focus only on the important emails. And that's just a taste. It also has nifty features like the Sane Black Hole and Sane Reminders. And best of all, you can use Sanebox with any email client or phone anywhere you check your email. See how Sanebox can magically remove distractions from your inbox with a free 2-week trial. Visit sanebox.com/MSCloudShow today to start your free trial and get a $25 credit.
All right, CJ, we got a handful of news items here that we're going to get through. The first two are two that I wanted to share. I thought about sharing last week, and I figured, let's just hold off into it on a news show. They're kind of interrelated. It's on something that I find to be really, it's another one of these examples of Microsoft really opening up to the rest of the world and not being, you know, the old Microsoft. It's just all, everything's all closed off. So,
yep.
Microsoft has a way of going through and working with all of their data inside of Azure in terms of like log data. And so we have this thing, part of Azure Monitor, which at some point we're going to, you know, I would love to get somebody on our show to come talk to us a little bit about Azure Monitor and just how this, it's like a new thing, but it's like a marketing term for a bunch of things now. So just kind of understand the positioning that they're doing with it. But One of the things in it where they store all the data is a lot of it's going into this thing called Log Analytics. And it's a way for them just to consume all of your logs. Well, what Microsoft has done in the past is that the way you look at your data in Log Analytics is using App Insights. That's the underpinning for App Insights. Or you have a query language that you can use. And as I'll touch on in just a minute, there's also a thing called Data Explorer, which people might be familiar with as something called Cousteau from a while ago. And what Microsoft has just done recently is they've announced that's in public preview is they've created a plugin that you can install as it's available as part of an Azure Monitor data source where your log data will now get published over to Grafana. So Grafana is a very popular open source graphing dashboard kind of tool. It's very popular like in the Kubernetes space and people use to monitor their systems and those sorts of things, creating different graphs and charts and everything. And it's just kind of cool that, I mean, you see this and it's kind of like, why would Microsoft do this? And I think part of it is because you got a lot of people that are coming from the Kubernetes space into AKS and they're used to using things like Grafana to monitor their applications and their environment. So instead of forcing people to use the stuff that we're all using inside of Azure, it's like, look, we can also take advantage of this and port the same logging data over to Grafana. There's a sister announcement too for this where they've also created a plugin for the Azure Data Explorer, the thing I just mentioned a second ago, which allows you to go through and follow business metrics and KPIs. It allows you now to do that exact same stuff, not just in Data Explorer, but you can also do the same stuff that you do in Data Explorer. You can now do it in Grafana as well.
Nice. Yeah, that's kind of cool. When they get there, people get the tools that they used to.
Yeah. So it's just a nice little thing to see them being nice and open about stuff.
Speaking of winning, Microsoft, there's some news here, very basic news. I really don't know much detail about it, but it says Microsoft wins $1.76 billion defense contract for the Pentagon. And so the detail is Microsoft Corp has been awarded a 5-year contract with $1.76 billion for delivering enterprise services for the Defense Department, Coast Guard, and Intelligence Services. Not sure what they mean by enterprise services. It's hard to know whether that is Azure cloud services, some of this, or like physical bodies, like, you know, consulting services. I doubt $1.76 billion to be spent on consulting services, but I don't know. I suspect it's some sort of cloud services contract anyway. There's not much more detail than that. I guess it's the Pentagon, so we may never know.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Microsoft winning some decent contracts out of defense. I hope it's for cloud. I guess we'll see. We may see. Yeah, but Microsoft doing some nice win there. That actually, there's a bit of a theme around big deals in this episode. So stay tuned after your after you come in with your next news item. I'll come back to more deals news.
Yeah, so I was going to do the other government news here on mobile. Is that what you're referring to? Or?
Okay. No, a different one, but go for it.
Yeah, so and this bit of news came out, I think, a little bit before the one that you just talked about, because I think that it was, this is tied into it as well. But there's an announcement that came out just recently that Outlook, so Microsoft Outlook, the mobile app for both iOS and Android, it now meets all security and compliance requirements and is ready for deployment by all U.S. government customers, which means now that the government can, like if you're using the government cloud or Office 365, the government instance, they can all use Microsoft Outlook on iOS and Android devices and know that it's all secured and everything. It's a huge deal, right? So they've been late last year, Microsoft said that they were on track to achieve top secret U.S. classified data certification. So there's a group and there's a, think of it as like an IT company inside the Defense Department called DISA, the Defense Intelligence Systems Agency. And they define like the security, or they implement the security for a lot of parts of the military network. I actually spent a year working for these guys, eye-opening business. But Microsoft said last year that they're on track to get the level 6 certification by the first quarter of 2019. It is really impressive, or it's eye-opening if you've never been involved in something like this, what it means to really lock a box down. I mean, it is, when you see like locking a network down, locking a box down, you think an environment is like locked down, and it's nuts. See, I think about 70% of my job was fixing the applications that I broke when I locked a box down. And then you turn around, I had this NSA level, it's called the STIG, that I had to implement on all web servers and SQL boxes at two different military bases. And like, after you do it, it's like, nothing works. Like, all right, let's figure out what it is.
Let's start going back to basics. Yep.
So it's eye-opening. It's really
eye-opening. Yeah, that's really cool. I wonder what they were using before. Anyway.
Must have been using the native clients.
I wonder if they were certified. I don't know.
No, that's actually a good point. I don't know.
Don't know. Okay, following on with Office news, Microsoft Office now available on Apple's Mac App Store. So for the longest time, if you're a Mac user, you'd go get your Office install from Office 365 and you'd install it, and it would install this thing called the Microsoft Auto Updater, I think it was called, something along those lines. And it's a kind of a crappy piece of software. It pops up at inopportune moments when you're in the middle of a presentation. It sort of pops up and goes, ready to check for updates. And it goes, checks for updates. And then it does it again. And then you get other updates. And like every time it does that for Skype for Business stops working for a while and then pops up security errors. And it's just like, it's a pain in the ass to update all that stuff.
Yeah.
So now if you're a Mac user, you can go get and install Office from the Mac App Store. You still have to sign into Office using your Office 365 credentials, right, to fully unlock it and license it. But at least the distribution is done through a mechanism that works a little better, in my opinion, than the Microsoft Auto Update tool on Mac OS. So, so you'll get the same updates through the App Store and all that sort of stuff. And I think that's a nice improvement for distribution of Office.
Well, I mean, everything. I agree with you. It's like, it's nice to be able to use the existing stores to do the distribution of when there's an update. I'm with you. Like the Microsoft Updater for Office has always been a pain in the butt to use. Same thing if you use Adobe Creative Cloud. They've got their own little updater that you've got to run through. And it's like, that stuff is just annoying. It'd be nice to go to like the one spot and be like, what app updates do I have? And everyone goes through that one clearinghouse. And
yeah, the confusing part about it is it doesn't seem to be all of Office. So clutching defeat from the jaws of victory every time. I can't help myself. So the Office 365 bundle includes Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Outlook, OneNote, and OneDrive.
What's missing?
Skype for Business for lots of business users.
That's true, yeah.
At least Skype for Business, right? I mean, there's a few other bits and bobs, but
I guess, I mean, you could argue.
So you're still going to have that, and you're still going to have the auto updater do the Skype for Business updates. I don't know. It seems a bit wonky to me.
Yeah.
I guess this is not the enterprise kind of model for distribution, but anywho.
I would like to switch over to using that, but then, you know, what does that mean? Do you have to uninstall everything you have and then reinstall it? That's a pain.
Yeah. I guess you do. Yeah. Hey, give it a shot.
Speaking of Skype for Business, how about you want a 2 second Teams rant?
I'm always up for one of them. I love Tim. I love hate relationships.
All right. Let me put on my, Ranty McRant face pants on.
Get off my lawn.
So,
are you Statler or Waldorf? I'll be the other one.
So, get this.
Okay, go for it.
All right. So, I use Teams now. I'm in, let's see, 4 organizations, 3 of which.
Stop right there. That's the problem.
I don't dislike Teams. I don't have anything against it. It's just not very productive. It's actually, for me now, it's turning into being anti-productive, unproductive. And so I'm in 4 different teams. 3 of them or 2 of them are probably the most active. So I spend most of my time, I can usually go without having to jump between 2 teams in a day. I can just stay in 1 for the most part. I find it really weird, though. I've always got to go back to my home team to be able to start a meeting that I've accepted. I can't go in the team that where the meeting is. You would think that it would follow you around, but whatever. So there's 1 team that I'm in that I'm not very active in. It just spun up. It's like a little preview program for a product kind of integration that's going to come out in a couple month or 2, something like that. Mm-hmm. And so they're doing these weekly calls for getting you involved. There's about 30, 40 people in these weekly calls. And they schedule the calls at a time when I have another call. And quite frankly, the other call is more important for me. And so I jump in on that one. And then I watch the recording or I skim through the recording of the other one.
Well, I think I see where this is going.
They created the call. They created the problem team created the call not as a meeting invite, but they created the invite or the call like inside of the conversations channel in that team, right? It's weird. Hmm. So if you want to, you can download the ICS and connect to it, add it to your meeting, but everything is inside that conversation. Now here's where the rub starts. There's 30 some odd people in this call. Whenever someone does a chat message, you get a notification.
Hmm. On all your devices.
On all of your devices. And so I now have all notifications turned off for Teams, not in the app, but I have it like shut off at the OS side on my phone and on my iPad because I'm trying to do this other meeting. And while I'm on this other meeting, I'm getting constant pings nonstop. And it's like, and you can't focus. I'm supposed to be presenting something you can't focus on. I'm like, this product is now inconvenient. So I post something on Twitter and all these people are like going, oh, just mute the meeting. I'm like, I can't. It's not my meeting and it's not it's not a real meeting. It's like it's apparently you have a thing called a conversation meeting. And they're like, oh yeah. It's like, well, that's actually been requested as a feature, but it's like apparently been out there for another year or so. I'm like, oh, go. And then Office 365 chimes in. It's like, make sure you vote up this thing on User Voice. I'm like, really? This thing on User Voice has 20 votes.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to give, if you guys can't do the notifications fix for the User Voice thing that's been out there since 2017 and it's been got over 1,000 votes on it. I'm not going to waste my time on this. So,
yeah, good luck with that, right? God, it's kind of one of those things. So the top votes in the User Voice have 16,000 votes, right? 8,000, 7,000.
And how long have 6,000. They been there?
Oh, my God. So the top one has been November the 1st, 2016.
Someone jumped in on me on Twitter and they're like, how can we restore your confidence in User Voice? I'm like, I got nothing wrong with my confidence on User Voice. Talk to the SharePoint team. They actually use it.
Yeah.
The team
support for multiple Teams accounts. That's one you'll want.
Yeah.
That has 6,500 votes and was submitted in January 2017. So that one's only been
2 years.
2 years.
But they're working on it, right?
Apparently.
Yeah.
Apparently it's coming real soon.
There was an opening on the Teams engineering team. I'm like, oh, look, that must be the guy that's supposed to be doing the notifications fix.
Yes. Anyway, all right. Nice.
That was my monthly Teams rant.
Fair enough. Hey, should we hear from one of our great sponsors?
We should. Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems in ever narrower timeframes with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focused on higher value tasks?
versed in nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations, Nintex can make that happen. With the Nintex platform, work flows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No-code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out for free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/trynwc.
Cool, we're back. In other news, has it ever confused you how in Windows, when you click on the search, hold on, do you use Windows?
No.
Every now and again? You know what I'm going to get at with Windows 10 when, you know, there's the search box at the bottom in the start menu and you click on it and it's like Cortana, but kind of like the old search box jammed together. Microsoft have decided finally that this is a bad idea and they're separating Cortana from search in Windows 10. So now when you type in the search box, that's just for searching. And then there's a little Cortana ring button over to the right of it. I've always been really dubious about the statistics about how many times Cortana's used on Windows 10, and I'm pretty sure, I'm like 99% sure, that the reason they say Cortana is used millions and millions and millions and millions of times per month is because they consider somebody clicking in the search box and typing CMD as a valid Cortana use of Cortana. I don't consider that a valid use of Cortana. So I suspect this may be part of that. But anywho, so now Cortana's being separated from the search box. That'll help. I think where they're going with this is like they just want to be able to make search better in Windows 10. And I believe this is the slow demise of Cortana as a virtual assistant, right? The next step. I think Cortana will end up being a bunch of services that you can call from a bunch of other places. And, you know, that could be from Alexa or Google. I think Saatchi has talked about doing stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I think this is the demise of like, okay, we didn't win the digital assistant kind of battle. So step one, remove it from the search box in Windows 10. Next step, remove the icon entirely because nobody bothers using it.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I feel about with Cortana. I don't hear anything about it. I don't know anybody that uses it. I mean, I'm sure that in the walls of Redmond, you see it being used, but I don't see it ever being used. It's not on any devices. I just don't. It doesn't seem like, it kind of seems like Microsoft's just like, well, if we stop talking about it, we will stop getting the attention for it. I just don't, now it's more of a branding thing that they seem to put on some of their products than they do actually do. I don't know. Maybe I'm not.
This looks like the slow demise of Cortana. Anywho.
Slow confirmation of the demise that's been happening.
Correct.
So mean. Correct. I'm sorry if this is your product.
Yeah. Apologies. We like to laugh about things too.
TechCrunch has an article here about AWS. They have launched a thing called WorkLink, making mobile internet sites and web apps easier. It's a fully managed service that for $5 a month and per user, it allows IT admins to give employees one-click access to internal sites, no matter whether they're on AWS or not. Have you looked at this much?
I read the article. I haven't looked at much more deeply, but what's fascinating is they're basically trying to say, hey, we can offer a solution that's better than VPN, right? Because nobody loves VPNs. They're all terrible to use. And it's basically like RDP to your internal applications.
That's what it looked like to me. It felt a bit Citrix-y.
Yeah, it definitely smells Citrix-y for sure. Because they're effectively taking screenshots and sending them down to the device, right? And so this WorkLink thing is like this reverse proxy kind of RDP Citrix-y kind of remote thing. And be able to access your apps from outside the firewall. Yeah, and somewhere in here it talks about like taking screenshots or something like that. Oh, yeah, here you go. A secure WorkLink container converts the site into an interactive vector graphic and sends it back to the phone. Yep, it's pretty much RDP.
Does that feel... Okay, so...
I think the only difference between that and RDP is RDP is a bitmap. I believe like they do some sort of like bitmapping or selective like bitmapping. Anyway.
This feels like a step backwards. I feel like we just like jump back like 10 years to... in tech, to solving a problem. So they wouldn't have done it if there wasn't a need for this. That's one thing.
Let's be fair, going and working for some of these companies would be like stepping back in time, right? And basically AWS is saying, hey, yeah, we know you've got these crappy on-prem applications that are going nowhere soon. We'll give you a sort of better-ish solution to accessing those, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway. Okay, so back to my thing about contracts. The Pentagon is reviewing an Amazon employee's influence over a $10 billion government contract that they're issued.
That's a B, right? With a boy, as a boy?
Billion. Bomber. Yep. So, turns out there's this guy who used to work at AWS. Then he went to work at the Defense Department. Then he worked on this thing called the JEDI, which is such a cool acronym. It stands for the Joint Enterprise Defense Infrastructure Contract. Then he left and went back to AWS, and then they won the contract. I think they won the contract. Anyway, Oracle. Oh, dear. Can't believe we're talking about Oracle. Anyway, Oracle are filing a lawsuit in the U.S. Court of Federal Claims alleging that the Pentagon should more fully examine the role of this guy in the contracting process and, yeah, whether he basically tipped the scales in Amazon's favor because he worked on this contract, then went to AWS and helped them win it and all this sort of stuff. So, yeah, first up, $10 billion contract. That sounds like a really bad idea to begin with.
Yeah, that's a big contract.
Yeah, surely. Anyway. And then this guy's been moving back and forth between AWS and the Defense Department. So it's being scrutinized a little more carefully. But I was like, when I saw the article headline, I was like, oh, I wonder if this is Microsoft. No, Oracle. Okay. Curious.
You know, it's funny you say that because I just threw another link in there. I'm going to inject into our news real fast. I saw this one today. Did you know there's a big copyright fight that's going on between Google and Oracle?
Oh, really?
Google released Android in 2008. It's all based on Java. At the time, Java was open and free and all that.
Oh, yeah. I see.
Oracle bought Sun or all the licenses and stuff to Sun in 2010 and then filed a lawsuit that said that you are infringing on Oracle's copyright to Java because Oracle owns now the copyright to Java. So they made it not open. They tried to make it closed. Mm. So one court said, you're full of it to Oracle and said that you can't do that. It is open. You can't like put toothpaste back in a tube. But another court reversed it. And then there was another lawsuit that happened that ruled on Google's favor. And then another court overruled it. And so now you've got these two kind of overrulings kind of sitting out there in the Court of Appeals. And you've got these two other things that happened that ruled in favor of it. Google is now going to the United States Supreme Court and saying, okay, you guys got to step in and you've got to make a final decision because we're in this state of limbo here. And Oracle's trying to play dirty and shut down Android.
What's even more interesting, right, is Google are not arguing about the formula of the toothpaste. Mm-hmm. Google are saying, you can't copyright what the nozzle on the toothpaste looks like that you interface with your toothbrush, right? They're arguing, Google is saying the interfaces to Java, so the API calls basically from one piece of software to another, you can't copyright that pattern. What you've copyrighted is the implementation behind your version of Java, right? The implementation. And that's cool, but you can't copyright what the interfaces to those things look like. That's what they're arguing about, right? And that'll be really interesting to see because, that has lots of interesting implications. Can you copyright the interface to a piece of software? Not the visual interface, like an API one.
Yeah. Just think about how restrictive that would really be. That would shut down so much stuff. I mean, you can't talk to this thing. I mean, you make a public API for something. It's an API for a reason.
Yeah. You could copyright the interface between your teeth and the toothbrush, whatever that interface looks like.
It's called an interface. That's the I in there is an interface. It's for other things to be able to talk to it. So if you don't want to do that.
Yeah. It'd be like copywriting the keypad on a phone. Like, one through 10.
Mine's just a screen.
You got a keypad. You can bring a keypad up, right? Mine's one of those like old people's phones with like massive buttons that I can see.
All right. That goes our old contingent. How about you do our last link there, CJ?
Yeah. I'll be really quick. Let's get on to the picks. If you're interested in Cloud Wars, there's this new website I came across called cloudwars.co, and it's by this guy. Gosh, I've just forgotten his name here. Anyway, it's from this place called Evans Strategic Communications. He writes just articles and bits and pieces. There's a podcast thing about Cloud Wars, right? Interesting articles, podcasts, definitely worth a nosy and keeping an eye on if you're interested in watching this sort of stuff. But the guy's like a research analyst from way back, used to be chief content officer and more recently is chief communications officer at Oracle. So speaking of which.
More wars coming out of Oracle.
Yeah, yeah. and then he left Oracle and started Cloud Wars. Yeah.
Oracle's a feisty little bunch. They're like the ones that are always pissed off, it seems.
Yeah.
Well, that's related. I'm sorry.
You know, it's like when all the cool kids leave the room to go do something fun and Oracle left standing there by themselves. Anyway.
They just come over.
All right.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users in organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
All right, CJ, so let's have some fun here. How about we do some picks?
Yeah.
How about you start off with our guest pick? Who is our lucky solo key winner this week?
Yes. This week, we've had a number of great submissions, like I mentioned at the beginning of the show. But this week, we've chosen to go with Jeffrey Byrd. Is that how you pronounce it? B-Y-R-D.
That's how I would. Yep, I don't know if that's cool. How he does.
I hope that's the way he says it, or I apologize. His link is on Space, which is pretty cool, but it's entitled Holy Crap, the Moon Was Struck by a Meteorite During the Super Wolf Blood Moon Eclipse. And he's caught a photo of it. Not Jeffrey, the guy who wrote this article.
Really? Did this guy submit it?
Yeah. So apparently this meteorite struck the moon during the big lunar eclipse, and there was a bright flash as it hit the surface, and somebody captured a photo of it. And apparently this dude's been like trying to capture these photos for years or something.
20 years?
Finally got one. Yeah. So this is pretty cool. So Jeffrey Byrd, that's how you say it, you are the lucky winner of a solo Photo 2 security token key, and we will be in touch and get your mailing address and send one out to you. Actually, when listeners get them, we'd really appreciate you took a photo of it or with you in it or something like that and tweeted it to us. We'd love that.
If you're so inclined. Tag the podcast and tag solo
and
keys.
Solo keys. Yeah, that'd be great. Just to let us know that you love it and that they know that we love them as well.
And we'd like to know that you got it too. So
yeah, that'd be awesome because I'm putting them in the mail yet to hear back.
Yeah, I was supposed to hand deliver one to a friend, to Ben, this week when we had a meeting, and that didn't happen. I forgot.
Cool.
So
what do you got for us this week?
I've got a sciencey kind of thing here. Now, this may be a bit sciencey kind of fiction, but it's an interesting idea. I was like, oh, that's interesting. So it's by newatlas.com, or an article by newatlas.com. The article is by a guy named Michael Irving, which, if you know who that is, he's an ex-Irvin. Well, that's different. Anyway, so whatever. Back to the topic. The idea of this article, kind of went off topic. The title of this article is Carbon Capture System Turns CO2 into Electricity and Hydrogen Fuel. So one of the cool things about this is that our oceans are seen as the great carbon bank. And carbon dioxide can get consumed, and it's like a giant store of carbon dioxide. And so using that as a model, what they've done is they've come up with a way to take the CO2, the carbon dioxide that is in the atmosphere, and use that as a fuel of sorts and an energy source of sorts through a chemical and electronic process to essentially harvest carbon dioxide out of the air and use it for not only to reduce the greenhouse gases, but also to generate electricity and hydrogen fuel out of it. It's a pretty cool concept. You read through the article and it's like, scientifically, like, yeah, this is pretty cool. I saw the link on Reddit and a bunch of scientists jumped in there and they're like, yeah, it's a cool concept. And that's usually the way how a lot of these things start. But we should make it clear that this might have to be ridiculously expensive and big to operate at any kind of scale.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Well, and they said there's a reason why we call the oceans the big carbon bank. I'm like, oh, good point.
Interesting. Yeah. Wow, that's pretty cool, though. Fascinating concept.
It's interesting. It's like, crazy ideas start this way. So who knows?
So they want to turn the ocean into a big battery. Got it.
Well, yeah, something like that.
Use it as part of a big battery.
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty sweet. I'll finish on a funny note. On a funny note, if you are put off by swear words, I suggest you just stop the episode now.
Yep.
So there's this really, really funny video that I came across, and it's this Finnish comedian who talks about how odd the English language is, and in particular, this video is about the word shit. And how odd our use of the word is, and how, you know, things like, I won't go into some of the jokes because I won't do as good a job as he is, but how it can be, it's one of those words that is kind of used, sometimes it can mean really good things, sometimes it can mean bad things, sometimes it can be very confusing for non-English speakers. Anyway, the video had me in fits of tears of laughter, how funny this guy is.
Jeffrey Bird's article that he picked for us was the shit. But my experience with Microsoft Teams has been the shit. How's that for an example?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, okay, so when you watch this video, if you're a Formula One fan, all I can picture is Kimi Raikkonen on stage saying all this stuff. It cracks me up. I just love the Finnish. First off, I love people from Finland because they just have this very wicked sense of humor, right?
Yeah.
Very dry. And you think they're the most serious and unhumorous people on the planet, and then they'll say it's the most funny thing you've ever heard in your life. And it's very on or off, right? So if we have any Finns that listen to the show...
We love you guys.
We love you guys, yeah. So this comedian dude is absolutely hilarious, much like I think Kimi Raikkonen is absolutely hilarious. Yeah. So yeah, it's really funny. You should go watch it.
Absolutely. Awesome. Good picks this week, man.
Yeah. I better run off to my next meeting.
Same here. I just looked at the time. Like, oh, wow, we nailed that.
Yeah,
right. Cool. Hey, man. Good catching up with you again this week.
Yeah, likewise, dude. Catch you soon.
All right. Take care.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a wave or an MP3, and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.